recordings are now started.
Great. Thanks, Lance. Well, good morning, good afternoon, and good evening to you all. Welcome to the RPM TMCH question sub-team call on the 26th of October at 1600 UTC. On the call today, we do have Kathy Kleiman, Kurt Pritz, Paul Tattersfield, Philip Corwin, Ron Melanchoglu, apologize, Edward Morris, and Susan Payne. We have apologies from Jay Scott. From staff today, we have Mary Wong, David T., and myself, Michelle D. Snyder. As a reminder, please state your name before speaking for transcription purposes. Thank you, and I'll turn the call back over to Phil Corwin.
Good day, all. I appreciate those who are joining today. I know we're all busy this week trying to clear the decks and prepare many of us for a long trip to Hyderabad. And so let's get going. Is there anyone on the phone line who's not in the chat room? Okay. So we'll assume for now, unless we hear someone pipe in, that everyone that the folks in the chat room is the sum total of folks on the call.
Actually, Phil, sorry, yes. This is Kathy. Paul Keating, I believe, is just on the phone.
Well, we haven't heard his voice. Are you there, Paul?
He wrote to me separately and said he's going to be in a noisy area. But
listen. Oh, okay. Okay. All right. Well, he may be listening. Okay. If Paul wants to chime in, we'll be happy to hear from him. So we're going to continue the agenda's continued discussion of the charter and community questions and discuss next steps next meeting, which will be the, not the subgroup, but the full meeting, full group meeting. And let me ask here, we have also on the right side these additional questions and issues. I believe these were from the other questions portion of the appendix to the charter. Could staff tell me if I'm correct on that? And are these questions not covered in any way in the document we have before us?
Hi, Phil. This is Mary from staff. And as Kathy indicated in her email, yes, the questions that you see regarding the providers that David has kindly pasted in the pod on the right-hand side, they are from our charter. They are from the section titled Additional Questions and Issues. So they are not in the TMCH section. Kathy's suggestion was to add them to the TMCH discussion that we're having now, I believe. And we had looked at the questions and figured that since they were aimed at all providers, that this could be something that the group comes back to as a working group, or it could be added as appropriate to each section as we deal with, say, URS and TMCH. I see Kathy has her hand up, so I'll cede to her.
Sure.
If that helps.
Why don't we hear from Kathy?
You know, this is Kathy. It was interesting when I went through the charter to find that, unless I'm mistaken, this is not all the questions that were in that section. It's just all the questions that talked about providers. And since that's really what we're doing now with the TMCH, these charter questions is providers, it's more a checklist to see are we missing anything. And I think Mary properly noted in one of the emails, which I appreciate, that there is a question really about kind of expanding the procedures that probably is meant to address design marks. So I think that is a catch. But it's more a checklist. Can I recommend that after we go through our current questions, or now, whatever you prefer, Phil, we just go down it and see whether we've covered all pieces. I think we have, but it's probably good to look at it because these seem to be exactly on point, both to the questions we're looking at now directly for the TMCH providers and also the ones that were kind of offshooting down to the Sunrise period trademark claims and other purposes. Thanks.
Okay. So anyway, so these questions that we're reviewing let me just make sure I understand what our game plan is here. When you say the providers, we're talking about the TMCH providers, about Deloitte and IBM?
I think
interpret
these questions.
Who are these questions that we're reviewing going to, and what's our target date for getting them out? That's what I'm trying to focus on with this question.
The questions and the agenda type.
Are these just the questions we want to have our working group focus on? We're trying to distill them down for our working group purposes. Is that the aim here? Yeah. Kurt, go ahead.
Yeah, no, these are the charter questions, the original charter
right.
questions for this whole group. And we in the meeting, we found some of them to be either vague or needing rewording in some way. So this small group was formed just to review the charter questions and put them in form that was easily understandable. And
understandable by our – so we're trying to basically combine and distill down the questions in the charter for the use of our working group. These aren't going to be sent out
right.
to a third party for a third party inquiry.
That's correct.
Okay.
Yeah, that's correct.
That's
and
what
before,
I thought. I just wanted to make
Susan
sure.
Talks, before Susan talks, I just want to say one thing. So, you know, thinking about this over the last several days, I think a couple of things. One is quite a bit of work went into the charter questions, and some deference should be paid to them. So as we go through them, I think we should, you know, if they're clear and they're, you know, we think they're the right question to ask, I think we should kind of let it be sort of and only make changes where necessary. And two is we got a bunch of questions to get through, so we should start. We should, you know, try to touch on them all. So,
agree. Yeah, and I agree we shouldn't try to rewrite every charter question, but we did find that some of them were duplicative or somewhat unfocused. Susan, why don't you go ahead, and then we'll plunge into these questions.
Yeah, it was just a really quick point, just to build on what Kurt's saying, actually, which is just I think we've already got a document with a load of questions in it, and we probably will struggle to get through them all in the space of this hour. So could I suggest we work on the ones that we already knew we were going to be working on, and then we can come to these additional questions that Kathy's highlighted at the end if we have time to see, as she says, whether they've been picked up. I'm not suggesting they're not important. I'm just saying they seem more overarching questions about each of the sections, and so I think we should get going on the ones we already know.
Yeah, I agree. Let's get going on the document, and if we have any time left, we can look at the other questions and see how they fit in, but that's something that we can also do in conjunction with staff after this call. So let's go to the document. Let's start at the top. The original charter questions should further guidance on verification guidelines for different categories of marks be considered. And proposed edited question is, should the verification criteria be clarified or amended, and if so, how? Not a huge amount of difference there. I'm fine with the edited version, but I'm willing to hear any thoughts on this one. And then there's going to be a clarifying paragraph, I see, when we scroll down, which refers to the various public comments. And I'm not going to read all of this. You folks can all read. What's the feeling of the group? Go with the revised question and the accompanying clarification as what should be used by our working group? Well, let's, as we go through this, let me, to simplify things, we'll see if anyone objects to using the revised clarified question. Otherwise, we'll just assume that after all the work that's gone into it, that we're okay with it. Is that, I hope that's an acceptable way to proceed. I think it'll be more efficient. So on question one, I don't hear any objections, so we'll go with the revised question and the clarifying paragraph to accompany with it. Question two, and I'm not going to read the source again. I'm not here to read everything you can read on the screen. Original question, what activities that the trademark clearinghouse undertake to communicate criteria? Does the TMCH apply when determining whether or not to accept marks and what to do when registrations are challenged? And I don't see any proposed substitute for that, so I'm presuming the group was fine with that question. David? Go ahead. Mr. Tate, can't hear you.
Hi, Phil. Sorry about that. Just take a second to come off mute there. Just to flag that this was a new question, which the group agreed should be added in last week, hence why there's no proposed amendment. Staff were tasked with formulating a response, and this is the formulation that we came up with, just to clarify where that's come from.
Okay. All right. So we'll leave it to the subgroup to decide whether that original question needs to be tinkered with in any way, but it'll be the placeholder for now. Moving on to the next one, original question, how can the clearinghouse provide education services not only for trademark owners, but for the registrants and potential registrants who are equally impacted by their services? And the suggested revised question is, should, and if so, how should? I'm not sure we need how should it. I think how would be sufficient, parentheses. The TMCH be responsible for education services for trademark owners, domain name registrants, and potential registrants. If the TMCH is not to be responsible, who should be? And there's a comment that there was an additional proposal to substitute the word guidance for education, and that's still open. So, again, I'm going to generally go with the revised question, reflecting the work of the group, unless there's objections. Kathy, and then Kurt.
And I wanted to ask staff and Kurt whether this is the group's revision or whether this was Kurt's revision before last week's meeting. Just, I was confused as I was going through all these tables. But I think it was a good idea, a good thought to substitute guidance and whatever the other term was, but I'd stick with education. I think guidance can be, education can be more neutral. Guidance is kind of pushing people in a direction. Sometimes it's viewed as that. I provide guidance to my clients, for example. But I provide education to lots and lots of people's clients. So I would recommend we go with education. Thanks.
Right. And I'll get to Kurt in 1 second. Just commenting on this revision, the major change is that the original question presumed that the clearinghouse was responsible. This starts with the question, is it responsible, and if it is, how should it do it, and if not, who should be responsible, if that's a desirable goal. Kurt, go ahead.
Yeah, I just wanted to point out it was my suggestion that we reviewed on the last call, and the revision was for exactly the purpose you stated, Phil, was to ask should it first, and then if so, how should it? And then, and I vote for education, too, just because I imagine there was some discussion about what word that should be in there the first time the question was formulated, and education I think it's more about, proactive outreach rather than, passive guidance. So I vote for education.
Okay. All right. So unless objections are heard, we'll go with the revision. That's our default position, unless we hear objections on this call. Next question, are design marks allowed under the currently adopted rules of the clearinghouse? Should design marks be allowed, and under what circumstances? And there's no revised version yet. There is a notation that this question is from discussions at the start of the working group with various parties, and this seems to be the right place for it. Then there's a lot more dialogue in that comment. Okay, I'm not sure what we're supposed to do with all that additional explanation, but we've got a...
No, the explanation was just explanation. It's not part of
right.
Workers back to the working group. Thanks, this is Kathy.
Okay. And so that's a new question. There's no proposed revision yet. We'll go with the new one as a placeholder. I'm going to call on staff, and then Kurt and Susan, are those new hands, or... and Kathy as well, or are they left over from prior? Well, I guess David took his down. Now it's back up. David, go ahead, and then I'll see whose hands are still up among the participants.
Thanks, Phil. Again, this is just from staff to, although you observed it, just to flag that, again, in terms of the versions of the document that we're looking at, this was added in as a question after staff circulated the latest, the version of discussions that took place on Friday, and the version that staff prepared went out on Monday. So this went out, this has come from a later draft, which I think I'm correct in saying was prepared by Kathy.
Okay. All right. And let's hear from Susan and then Kathy. Susan?
Thanks. Hi. Yes, sorry. I couldn't remember how to get off mute, which you'd think would be instinctive by now. Yes, this one, I think this has come from questions that we were putting together when we were in the subgroup that was looking at questions to go to TMCH providers to ask them questions. And I don't think that that's the same thing as a charter question. I don't think this is a charter question. I'm not suggesting that we shouldn't be considering this point. That was why we were asking the question of the TMCH provider. We wanted to ask them about you know, what they do in relation to design marks and what their current processes are, and that we were eliciting that information. That doesn't, I don't believe that that needs to be a charter question. I think the charter question is less granular than that, which is just, you know, what marks are accepted into the TMCH, and is this the correct balance, or, you know, does this reflect the correct balance? And that's something, you know, at a high level. I don't think we should be getting into the granular on our charter questions. And indeed, I thought this was already covered by what's
going on. Are you concerned about this question being in this document? Or are you okay with it?
I'd prefer it not to be, because I think this is a question we were asking the provider. This isn't a question that's part of the charter for this working group. Clearly, we have to consider the concept of design marks, but I don't think we need a specific charter question about design marks, which I think gives a kind of places too much emphasis and importance on just one of the many questions we're reviewing.
Yeah. I will say, as a co-chair, I do think that I'm not opining on whether or not this particular question should be in the final document, but I do think the criteria for being a mark that gets in the clearinghouse is certainly within the remit of this working group. And so the question of whether design marks should or shouldn't be listed in the clearinghouse is one that's within our jurisdiction under the charter generally.
But I think my point was the very fact that when we were working out what questions to ask the providers, the TMCH providers, the very fact that we came up with a question which was asking them about this points to the fact that it's already in the charter. Group of us went to the charter questions and looked at them and then worked out what questions to ask providers to gather data. So I'm saying I think it's within remit. I just think it's already there, and we don't need to be specifically calling out design marks. I think there's a general point about us looking at, you know, what marks are allowed in the TMCH, and are they, you know, are the categories correct, if you like.
Okay. All right. See Kathy's hand up, Kathy, and then I'll call
sure.
on Mary.
And in this case, I am unequivocally taking off my hat as co-chair and saying I was shocked that the question wasn't there, because it's come up so many times. I'm referring to a question now in the agenda notes, you know, from our charter. Are providers exceeding the scope of their authority and any of the procedures they are adopting? we were shocked, to find several of us on the STI. I went to the whole group that had been NCSG's team, which was Constantinos and Wendy Seltzer and myself, and we were shocked to see the TMCH provider accepting design marks because we thought they were barred. We thought that they were unequivocally barred. So this is one that, because it hasn't, so when we're asking the questions of the providers, it's fair to ask, you know, what is it that's going, you know, how are design marks being reviewed? Because we have no idea. It's a big black hole. So I think that's a fair question to ask. But whether they should be there at all is a threshold question. And if we haven't gotten there, it's so clear in certain people's minds. I'm sorry it hasn't been communicated well, but it's a biggie. This is a biggie. And whether we want to phrase it in asking whether other things have been adopted that shouldn't or other things are being accepted that shouldn't, e.g. design marks, that's fine. But I think we have to flag it because it is driving, you know, part of the people involved in this process completely nuts. Thanks.
Okay. And Mary, your hand is up.
Yes, it was. And to note first that I've pasted the question that Susan was referring to that was developed by the other subteam to be sent to the providers. And part of that question seeks clarification as to the criteria for validating design marks that were submitted. You know, bearing in mind what Susan said and looking at the sort of marks that I think anecdotally certainly people have said have been accepted besides design marks, I think the staff are a bit concerned about calling out specific types of marks. So in looking through the charter questions that we already have, first under what we now have a balanced category, we do have a question about whether the scope is too broad. So one suggestion that we had was to note that the question of design marks has been raised. It is important. And following feedback from the providers, we can come back to this. As Kathy notes, it could be a sort of including design marks. And in the sense of where it fits, one alternative is instead of having a separate question, to add it to the breadth and balance section or the relevant question there. Thanks, Phil.
Okay. Okay, so we have some disagreement about whether this particular question should be in the final mix. I'm not sure we can. Kathy, is your hand up again? Oh, I'm.
It is. It is.
Let's have some additional discussion, but I'm not sure we're going to be able to resolve whether or not this question should be in on this call, and I would like to try to get through the other questions. So.
Sure. Then I think we have to put in the question from the charter, are providers exceeding the scope of their authority in any procedures that they're adopting? And because it's not balanced, we're going to get to balance later, whether, you know, categories of goods and services, overstretching the categories of goods and services. But this is, we'll get to balance, but this is a factual question. What did the rules say and what are they doing? Are they exceeding the scope of their authority? And maybe there are other areas as well. So I think it's one or the other, the design question or the charter question. But I don't think we can drop it. Fact. Thanks.
Okay. Susan, you have an additional statement on this?
Honestly, I wasn't saying, I hope you haven't heard me as suggesting that we aren't going to be considering the question of design marks. I actually thought Mary's suggestion was pretty helpful. You know, the question that she's talking about, the first one in balance says, is the protection of the TPH too broad? And then, it's been revised. But anyway, it talks about the balance between rights holders. It then goes on to talk in particular about things like descriptive marks, secondary marks with secondary meaning. You know, we could easily say in, you know, design marks would also be, you know, something that needs to be considered in relation to this question. I'm not saying we're not going to consider design marks. I just don't think it needs a whole question all on its own.
Phil, this is Paul Keating. I'm sorry, I'm not online, so I don't have the ability to raise my hand.
Understood, Kaval.
Okay. I agree with Kathy in this one, and I think that it is a scope of authority. Are they exceeding their – I think it falls in two places, actually. It falls in – are they exceeding the scope of their authority under the rules in order – by accepting these types of marks? And then a second place note is, even if it is within the rules, how is it treated from a balance standpoint? So I think that this rule is, this question is extremely relevant in connection with both of those inquiries, because I can see, you know, a design mark and how that's portrayed as a phonetic equivalent alphanumeric string is a judgment call. It's subjective in nature as to which is the pronounced portion of the design element. I think that it falls within both places. It equally falls in within the context, how are they treating things like exclusions and carve-outs of the trademark, where there's an express disclaimer. I think that those are all important. Those are important in terms of what is incorporated within the mark as a whole, and the disclaimers are probably more appropriate in the context of balancing, because the mark remains itself a valid registered mark, but you've disclaimed almost the entire portion of the mark. Is it fair to allow this to be included in the TCM, in the TMCH? I think that's a balancing question. But I think that the question that is at issue here is a scope and authority question, as well as a balancing question. Okay. I'd like to see both of those items as Susan has mentioned, as described in charter questions, and this can be underneath either of those charter questions.
Okay.
I'll go on mute again, though.
All right. Thank you, Paul. As chair of this call, I'm going to state the situation we seem to have is strongly held feelings on both sides of the issue of whether this question should be included, although there's a general agreement that the working group at some point is going to be discussing whether design marks are accepted, whether they should be accepted, and if they are accepted, what's the proper way to verify them. I would suggest, in the interest of getting through the rest of this document, we defer further discussion on that proposed question for Hyderabad and get back to the document. So, and proceeding down to the bottom of page 5, next question, should there be an additional or different recourse mechanism to challenge rejected trademarks? And there's no suggested revision, so we'll go with that question for now unless there's an objection to the question itself. Okay, hearing none. How quickly can a canceled trademark be removed from the trademark clearinghouse? And the revised question is, how quickly should a canceled trademark be removed from the clearinghouse to avoid discouraging or losing domain name registrations? I'm going to ask for some explanation from whoever wrote this revision, how removal that would be from the claims notice or whatever, or Sunrise registrations, but I'm not sure how the discouragement would arise. I'd like some explanation on that. I see Susan and then Kurt have their hands up.
Well, it wasn't my amendment, so maybe if it was Kurt, perhaps I should pass it to him first.
Okay.
Well, I think it's Susan. Yeah, so I thought that I thought, you know, so if we ask the question, how quickly can a canceled trademark be removed from the TMCH, and we get an answer back that would not be fast enough to avoid claims notices being sent, a lot of claims notices being sent out, where the mark had already been, requested to be deleted, you know, just getting an answer back that the time's inadequate isn't necessarily a good answer for us. And so the policy for us, I would think, is that trademark should be canceled in a speed approach, you know, so that registrations aren't discouraged. So I'm being really inarticulate here. But, asking the question, how quickly can a canceled trademark be removed? You know, we might get an answer that we all say, oh, that's good. Or we might get an answer that says, oh, that's not very good. But then we have no real recourse because we have our answer. So I was trying to pose a question that was more policy related than operationally related.
Okay. speaking personally, I think the question of the original question is operational. How quickly can it be done? The revised question is how quickly should it be done, which is more policy in nature. I can think of many other reasons. I mean, certainly getting it out to avoid generating claims notice is one reason, but I think another clear reason is that if it's no longer a valid trademark, it shouldn't be in the database of the clearinghouse. It undermines the integrity of the database. So I would think we'd want them removed as quickly as possible. So just speaking personally, I think we might just say how quickly should a canceled trademark be removed from the trademark clearinghouse and just end it there with a question mark. And then in discussing, when the work group discusses the question, all those other considerations of database integrity, erroneous claims notices, all of that can be raised in the discussion. Susan, I see your hand up.
I was going to, I mean, similar to you, I suppose, I was going to say we could just keep how quickly can a council trademark be removed, because it's useful to have that, to explore that actual practical question. And then is it, you know, is this satisfactory? I mean, we obviously, once we've got the information, we need to do something with it. But if it's 24 hours, we may, you know, the answer to that may be, oh, satisfactory.
Okay.
So this is Paul Keating.
Yes, Paul.
Question. So I think just moving from Susan's earlier comment on the granular nature of questions, perhaps the question to be asked here is, what is the process for removing trademarks from the database? Okay. Number one, who has the obligation? I don't actually know that question. I'm ignorant. I don't know if it's in the rules. If the trademark holder has the obligation to notify upon cancellation, how is cancellation being discovered? And then what is the process? And how long does it take? Or how long should it take? This is all within how is the trademark removed, other than voluntarily.
Yeah.
I think from a non-granular standpoint, the question should be how are trademarks removed from the, or how should trademarks be removed from the database? And then the rest of these follow as subsets. I'll go back on mute.
Okay. Thank you, Paul. And before calling on the other participants, I'm just going to raise the question. Given that, you know, trademark owners tend to only register their more important trademarks in the clearinghouse. Is this, how often does a rights holder register an important trademark and then within the life of that trademark registration in the clearinghouse cancel it? That would be a rather unusual situation. But Susan, you have further comments here?
Sorry, I forgot my hand was up. I think I was going to comment. I don't think they do get cancelled. The mark gets cancelled that often, but it obviously, as Kathy's pointing out, you know, it can happen. And clearly, once it's cancelled, we need to be comfortable that there's a process for removal.
Yeah. Well, based on the discussion so far, it sounds like we're heading toward a question along the lines of. How quickly can and should a canceled trademark be removed from the trademark clearinghouse, and whose responsibility is it to initiate the action? Something along those lines. Well, thoughts on that?
So this is Paul Keating. I still think it should be a question about the overall process of removal, and the rest of these questions are subsets of that principal question. So how are trademarks removed from the database? And then it is on cancellation, you know, who's responsible for notifying cancellation? How soon are they removed typically? How often does notification have to be provided? You know, how quickly does the notification have to be provided? Should there be an obligation to notify the TMCH that there is a pending claim for cancellation that currently exists in the U.S. Trademark context.
any litigation has to be notified to the USPTO.
Okay. Well, let me say two things, Paul. One, I think when we say how quickly can, once we ask how quickly can it be done, the answer involves a description of the operational aspects. And also, these questions are designed to spur focused discussion, not to raise every potential policy consideration that might arise in framing the answer. So we're trying to, here to have short, focused questions that focus the policy discussion afterwards, but not necessarily every element that's going to arise in that policy discussion has to be put in each question.
Okay. Now, I'm not suggesting process versus I'm not suggesting we use process over policy in terms of language. So I'm fine with should and those things, those types of descriptions. But I do think that you've pinged on a couple of related questions, which is whose obligation is it to notify?
Right.
Who should be responsible for notification or as cancellation, and how soon should the database be updated?
Okay. Thank you, Paul. I see Mary's hand up. Mary, go ahead.
Thanks, Phil, and thanks, Paul. I'm actually just putting into the chat the current question on this topic. It's not exactly the same as what we're discussing. It's not exactly the same as what Paul suggested, but because some of what Paul suggested seemed to me to relate seeking information and then coming back to consider the more overarching question, I thought it would be helpful to see the other sub-teams question on cancellation, which asks how are the marks that are canceled handled, and what is the TMCH process? So I think, Phil, that the point here is we want to separate out what might be appropriate as an overarching charter question about the TMCH versus things that we first need to find out more information on and then come back to as part of the broader inquiry.
Okay. So that question is going out from the data team. Correct?
Yes, that's right.
Okay. All right. Well, again, my thinking is that the revised question, that the should part raises a necessary policy consideration, but that the word can should be in there, can and should, because can gets to the operational aspects. And so that's my proposal for that, how the revised question should read. Any objections to that? Just having how quickly can and should a canceled trademark be removed from the trademark clearinghouse, period. And then all these other considerations can arise when we actually discuss how to answer that question.
This is Paul Keating. I think that's a great compromise, Phil.
Okay. Any objections? If not, I'm going to move on to the next question. And staff, just take note of that. All right, next one, original question. This is bottom of page 6. Is the protection of the trademark clearinghouse too broad? Is the trademark clearinghouse providing too much protection for those with a trademark and a generic or descriptive dictionary word? Proposed revision is, does the scope of the trademark clearinghouse and the protection mechanisms which flow from it reflect the appropriate balance between the rights of trademark holders and the legitimate rights of non-trademark registrants? In particular, oh, this is a long revision, A, where the trademark is granted as descriptive dictionary word, and then there's a parenthetical, B, where as a result of a TMCH verified entry, potential registrants with legitimate interest in the domain name, another long parenthetical, loses or relinquishes the opportunity to register domain names due to sunrise or claims notices. Personal comment, I'm not sure. If it's a valid trademark, those holding the trademark, you know, get to participate in the sunrise if it met the criteria. I'm going to stop there. There's a short original question and a much longer proposed revision. And I see Kathy's hand up. Let's have some discussion on this one.
Thanks, Phil. So this question was designed to substitute for other questions. So I actually, unless you object, before we get to the balance question, I wanted to get to some of the underlying factual questions that I think we have to I think in the last meeting we agreed to kind of shunt them off to other areas to be evaluated. But I want to make sure we're not dropping them. And the balance question may be something we have to go back to all the way at the end. It may not be something we start with for the TMCH providers, but after we do Sunrise and trademark claims and others, then we come back to the balance question. But one of the underlying questions was, is the protection of the TMCH procedures too broad, too narrow, or appropriate? With some of the changes. And we had kind of suggested that we actually send that to Sunrise, period, trademark claims, and others. So is the protection, and now I'm in the new column, the proposed action or rewrite for meeting on the far right side. So is the protection of the TMCH procedures, and this is where I've modified it, including the Sunrise, period, TM claims, and others, too broad, too narrow, or appropriate? Is the TMCH providing too much protection, too little protection, or appropriate protection for those with a trademark on a word that is also a generic term or a dictionary word? And then I go on to talk about generic terms because I know there was some concern about that, but it does mean something different than dictionary word. So I just want to make sure that we've agreed that we're sending that particular kind of fact-based question off to the trademark claim before we do balance, that we're sending the question that was designed to replace the balance question, that we're still sending the underlying question off to trademark claim, Sunrise, and other purposes.
Okay, thanks. Kathy. Susan, and then I'll call on David after Susan.
Actually, can I ask Kathy to explain that again? That was completely unclear to me. I'm not sure what you're suggesting.
The balance question that Phil raised does not replace the original question. If you look at the left column, it's, is the protection of the TMCH too broad? Is the TMCH providing too much protection for those with a trademark on a generic or descriptive dictionary word? That's the far left column. That was the underlying charter question that we've been asked. So asking if there's balance doesn't answer that question. First, there's a factual question. Is the protection too broad? And we've been asked to make it more neutral, so too narrow or appropriate is a fair question to ask. And it was my understanding from last week that we agreed that you can't evaluate the protection just based on what's in the database, in the Trademark Clearinghouse database. You have to, which is a repository, you have to look at it based on how the database is being used. This was a clarification, I think, in the last conversation or two. So I wanted to make sure, Susan, and tell me if this still isn't clear, that we're keeping the original question as modified and expanded, so too broad, too narrow, or appropriate protection, and sending it off, as we're sending other questions off, to be evaluated under the Sunrise period questions, to be included with the trademark claims questions, and to be included if we get to other purposes to which the trademark clearinghouse database is being used. So, again, before I didn't want to see this as a substitute for the question because I don't think the balance question replaces it, but if we – I think we have to keep both, and I just wanted to make sure that's what we're doing.
Wait, Kathy, you're proposing that we keep both the original question and the edited version.
I'm proposing that we keep the original question as edited and also keep the balance question.
Wait, what's the – is this the balance question? I'm not sure what you're referring to, balance question.
Okay. Does the scope of the Trademark Clearinghouse reflect the appropriate balance between the rights of trademark holders?
Okay. Is that question lower down on this document or is that in a separate document?
Isn't that what you were just reading or am I in the wrong place completely?
I'm reading the question at the bottom of page 6.
Kathy, it's in the fourth column. It's the final edited question. But
yeah, that the balance is in the edited version, not in the original.
Yeah.
So you're reading Kurt's
Kathy,
version.
Can I suggest?
Yeah, please go ahead.
Paul Keating. I think the edited question is fine. I think balance by itself
necessitates an inquiry as to whether it's overly broad, overly narrow, or just right. And I would end the question before you get to the in particular part. I think
Paul Keating?
To answer, yeah, this is Paul Keating. I'm sorry.
Okay, thanks.
And I'm sorry to people that might be in the queue. I can't see a queue because I'm just on the phone. But I think that if you terminated the question right after the word registrants and forget all the rest of it, because all the rest of it is basically incorporated within the question, right? There are specific instances that people would inquire about in the context of the overall question. So I think that if the nature of assessing a balance means you must, by definition, whether it's too narrow, overly broad, or just right, and in what instance.
Yeah, I like that suggestion, Paul, speaking personally. David, chime in, please.
Thanks, Phil. Just to follow up on the discussions that were had last week, although the too narrow, too broad, just right phraseology was used last week, I think, going back to the notes that we had from the call last week, the determination was expressly not to use that language and instead just use the language of balance. The other issue I just wanted to point out was to answer Kathy's starting question on this, which was whether or not this question would be kept here in this balance section and then also applied through the question specifically and specifically addressed to Sunrise Claims Notice and private RPMs. As you'll see in the comment, Kathy, if you scroll down to page 8, where this question, as drafted at the end of the last meeting, concludes. You'll see that staff have made a note that this question is to be copied over into the specific questions to be targeted towards those three mechanisms.
Which question are you referring to for that?
Kathy, that's the question that as drafted, it's in the... not the column that you've added, but the question, the column that's entitled Final Edited Question. And although it's been titled, laterally titled CURT, and that's not actually accurate because it's the question as we've noted it from having been drafted by the sub-team at the conclusion of its conversations last Friday. And you'll see just if you scroll down to page 8 that I've left a comment in there which should hopefully answer the concern that you've raised.
So we're moving the question, are legitimate non-commercial, commercial and individual registrants losing legitimate opportunities to register domain names in new GTLDs? That's the question.
No, as you'll see, all the text is highlighted in red because the comment refers to, and it's just the formatting of the question as it's appeared now with the extra column added in, that applies to all of the question, not simply the sub-clause B.
So we're going to take the balance question and put it in to...
Yes, obviously it will have to be redrafted appropriately for the particular Sunrise Claims Notice and private RPMs, but the point raised has expressly been noted in the notes from last week's call.
So as modified. Okay. Thank you, David. I'll think about it now in light of your clarification.
Okay. Thank you, David. With 9 minutes left, let's try to put this one to bed. Again, my bias personally is towards short, focused questions and not trying to put every consideration in the question that the working group might want to raise in answering the question. So I'm kind of enamored with Paul Keating's suggestion that the edited question should be, does the scope of the trademark clearinghouse and the protection mechanisms which flow from it reflect the appropriate balance between the rights of trademark holders and the legitimate rights of non-trademark registrants, question mark. And then all the other stuff about when it's a generic word, the dictionary word versus a unique trademark term, and, where someone might want to register the domain might not do so because it got registered in Sunrise or they got a claims notice. All of that can be discussed from the question. Karen, happy to hear from you.
Hi, thanks. I think as this call goes on, I'm becoming more confused about what exactly we're doing with these questions, because it seems to me like what we're asked to do is draft very neutral questions meant for information gathering. That information should then inform our advocacy points, and it seems to me like the way that these questions are being drafted and redrafted seems to be aimed at actually starting the advocacy portion of this working group prematurely. So either I'm confused, and I'm happy to hear if I am. I mean, I would be happy to hear that I am, but I would, I guess, be relieved. Or I think that there is a lot of sort of premature posturing going on with the drafting. I don't think it's appropriate for us to be talking about legitimate registrants and balancing when we seem to not even be, frankly, close to that stage of the discussion at this point.
Okay. And let me – thank you, Karen. Let me state here, and this is – I was somewhat confused at the beginning of the call. I thought I had clarified, and staff, correct me if I'm wrong, that what we're doing here is we're taking the charter questions and saying, okay, we're obligated as a working group to look at all the charter questions, but we have the latitude to, one, combine repetitive questions into a single focus question, two, decide that some question just isn't worth pursuing, and three, add additional questions, even if they weren't in the charter or the appendix, to it. So this is a document of preparing focus questions for the use of the working group. Is that understanding correct, Ms. Wong? I see your hand raised.
Phil and everyone, that is absolutely correct. That was the understanding,
right,
and that was why this group was set up. And the key word, I think, that was used in setting up this group was clarification, because it was felt that some of the questions that we started with were not entirely clear.
Right. So, again, the purpose of this is not to prepare questions to be sent to a third party. The purpose of this exercise is to clarify the questions that the working group is going to focus on. So,
yes, that's correct.
And that's why I've been an advocate on this call for short, focused, final questions that don't take one side or the other, don't tell the working group what it can or can't look at, but raise the basic operational, legal, technical, and policy questions that the group can get into in detail once it focuses on each question. Okay. So at 4 minutes left, we're obviously not going to complete this document. Mary, can you make it short? I see your hand up, Mary.
I can, and it was just to repeat a suggestion in the chat that if we agree to keep the questions short and focused for clarity so that the full working group understands what the question is when we get to it, what we can do as a result of this subteam's deliberations and starting with this table is note for the record some of the specific instances, examples, and concerns that have been highlighted, and those can help inform the working group's deliberations at the appropriate time.
Okay. Thank you, Mary.
Excellent, Mary.
So with the 4 minutes left, I think we can – what's left on page 8, I think we can knock off in about 1 minute, because the next question, there's no proposed revision. It's our legitimate, non-commercial, commercial, and individual registrants losing legitimate opportunities to register domain names in new GTLDs. And I will comment personally, I don't see that question tying it to the clearinghouse or any other rights protection mechanisms unless it's, so it almost needs a addition due to the trademark clearinghouse or due to any of the RPMs. But we don't have a proposed revision, so we'll go with that one as a placeholder.
Oh, I think we do have a proposed revision, Phil, just to send that off to revise that for Sunrise Period in the far right column, to send that off to Sunrise Period trademark claims and other uses. That's more of a...
Oh, okay. I wasn't looking there because those were generally comments and not the proposed revision in that last column.
So it's just that the question on the left side revised to include through Sunrise Period trademark claims and other purposes.
Okay. And in that revision, might I ask, I don't know who was the author of the revision. You may have been, Kathy. What is the term private purposes referred to?
Some of the private purposes are that third category of uses of where the trade that we talked about kind of in some of those overview slides, or this is the intention, when we were doing some of the overview presentations of the Trademark Clearinghouse database and how it's used. There were three ways it was being used: the Sunrise Period, the trademark claims, and then privately it's being used, like the Donuts Protected Marks List. So it looks like we'll probably be looking at all three of those. So just wanting to make sure that the question is asked in all three applications if we go into all those.
Okay. Susan, let's hear from you, and then we're going to need to wrap this. Go ahead.
Thanks, Phil. I guess I don't understand why we need to ask this question at all. I think the one above that we've just spent ages talking about talks about reflecting the appropriate balance between the rights holders, you know, trademark holders and non-trademark registrants. There we go. Appropriate balance. All done. This is duplicative.
I thought we just crossed it out, though.
No, we kept the appropriate balance.
I thought we just crossed out all the details.
Not the sub-details, but the question, are we reflecting the appropriate balance? That's it. You know, isn't this the same question? Or at least doesn't this question naturally get to be considered under that question?
Okay, point noted. It is now the top of the hour, so we're going to have to draw this call to a close. We made some progress today. Staff, can you please revise this document to reflect any changes we agreed to on this call, and note where we that when we stopped the call, we were at this middle question on page 8 and have not resolved it yet. So so when we take it up, we can take up from where we went from. And then I see hands up, but I'm just going to say, in terms of next steps and next meeting,
right,
let's hear from Mary on that. Our next step and next
Paul,
meeting
are
in Hyderabad.
This is Paul Keating. Mary, a request of Mary is, Mary, can someone on staff please number the questions at issue? And if, because we have categories of questions, can you categorize the, so it's, you know, Roman numeral 1, question A, or whatever, or category A, question 1. Because it's impossible to discuss these questions amongst ourselves without exchanging, you know, what appears on my page 8 may not appear on someone else's page 8.
Yeah, I think that's a good suggestion, Paul, to number these questions and make it a lot easier to get everybody on the same page. Mary, please enlighten us as to our next steps, next meeting.
Thank you. And, Paul, we will certainly do as you suggest. So the original idea was for the sub-teams agreed questions. We had hoped to complete it, but we have not yet. So, but to present whatever we have agreed on to the full working group in Hyderabad, we may not have too much time to discuss it, but that was the idea, to show that we've made some progress and that here are some of the questions that we believe are now further clarified. So from the staff perspective, it seems like we do have enough to do that. On the clear understanding, obviously, that these are not the full set of TMCH charter questions. So we want to seek clarification from this group that we are still good to do that. Secondly, in terms of a next call, I think this is the same problem that the full working group has, that if we follow the typical ICANN meeting schedule and we don't have a meeting the week after, the week following that is Thanksgiving week in the U.S., meaning that quite likely this sub-team and indeed the full working group will only reconvene in the last week of November. Does that help, Phil?
Yeah. But so in Hyderabad, it'll be the full working group meeting.
That's right.
Okay. All right. I thank everyone for being on the call. The one personal observation I'd make is that I know everybody wants to get these questions posed the right way, but I would hope we could agree on a final set with the knowledge that all the policy issues that are going to be contested are going to be able to be raised by everybody when we actually address the questions as a full working group. So while I know it's important to get the questions the way people are comfortable with them, nothing in any question precludes anyone from raising any policy concern or bringing any information to the attention of the working group when we actually get into the questions. And let's hopefully keep that in mind as we try to agree on final versions of all of these. And with that, I will thank you. I see Kurt saying, yeah, we'd like to have a final list of these questions before Hyderabad, but I just don't see how we're going to get it done. The clock has run out. So we'll go with Mary's suggestion, I think, for how we handle Hyderabad, and we present the categories, tell people about the questions we've been able to agree on, and try to finish this up on the next call post-Hyderabad. Seems to be the way to go. Okay. Any comments on that? If not, I'm going to shut the call down.
Thank you, Phil. Safe travels, everyone.
Okay. Safe travel to everyone, and see many of you in Hyderabad. Bye-bye.
Thanks, everybody. Take care.
Bye-bye.
Great. Thank you. The meeting again has been adjourned. Operator, please stop the recordings and disconnect all remaining lines. Have a great remainder of your day, everyone. Goodbye.